This is Vatican Radio. I'm Tracy McClure. We sat down with our favorite Vatican watcher, Joan Lewis, EWTN's Rome Bureau Chief, for a look at the past week's events here in the Vatican. Come join us in studio. Welcome back, Joan. Good to see you. You and I were in Lebanon at the same time covering the Pope's trip there back in September.
We were. Indeed, we should do a separate show just
on Lebanon.
On that and on some of the behind-the-scenes things, because that type of thing is interesting, too. But, gosh, you look at what we have for today.
I know. It's been a busy week. A lot of things going on. Of course, we had the trial with the Pope's butler.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, either we're going to have to make this show twice as long or talk twice as fast. I don't know which.
Both, probably.
Yeah. No, two events this week which made world headlines were obviously the trial of the Pope's butler, who has been accused of aggravated theft of papal documents and other documents from the Secretary of State. Many originals were found in his possession in his home. Actually, the gendarmes who were asked at the trial about the finding of the documents in the search reported the figure they used was hundreds of thousands, and about 1,000 of which were directly related to the Pope, to the Secretary of State, with handwriting on it, even in German, "Please destroy." And so the trial is expected to end practically as we're speaking. So we don't have the result of that today. We're speaking just before that trial, the final day, Saturday, and also obviously just before the start of the synod, which we will be mentioning anyway. So the papal butler himself, he testified Tuesday and actually pleaded innocent to the charge of aggravated theft, pleaded guilty to the charge of abusing the Holy Father's trust in him all these years. But it's something that really all of the findings, the documents in his possession, how they got there, he said he did this all on his own. He did not do it for any kind of compensation, money or otherwise. But we've had several hours of briefings, the media has, by 8 of our colleagues who have gone every day, the days that there has been a hearing. So hours and hours of hearings, and everything reads like a script for a Hollywood movie, I have to say. So we don't know the result of this man. He was with the Pope 6 years. He is 46, Paolo Gabrielli, a husband and father of 3 children. So obviously this has to profoundly affect a family. He has been at home under house arrest after being held in a cell in the Vatican. Sad story, actually. And we'll obviously next week probably be, you know, talking about the verdict. Again, that is expected, as we're saying this, you know, Saturday morning.
Okay, so, and then, of course, another rather dramatic event, unusual here in
exactly.
the Vatican, that fellow who climbed up onto the dome of St. Peter's this week.
He did. Tuesday afternoon, he joined a group. I imagine many of our listeners have been to the dome of St. Peter's. When you climb the 320 stairs within the dome itself and get to the top where the lookout is, there's a
railing
mm-hmm. probably 4 feet high or something else like that. And this man was able to tie a rope to the railing. There's security up there. The man put a rope around himself, put a rope around this railing, rappelled himself down to a ledge above a very small window on the dome, stayed there for about 30 hours.
Mm. And, of course, he was protesting these austerity measures in Europe.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it had obviously nothing to do with the Vatican, but he's very smart. He knew if I protest in a piazza in Milan, no one's going to cover me. If I go on the dome of St. Peter's, people will listen to my objections. Anyway, he is back down. He came off on, I think it was Wednesday night, 8 or 9 o'clock. But in the meantime, you had to have the staff of the basilica, they're called the San Pietrini, the workers for the basilica, they had a staff of 8 or 10 of them around the clock watching this man. I mean, to see that he wouldn't fall, that he wouldn't faint, that he wouldn't try to jump. So that was the backdrop, the two interesting, unusual events in the Vatican. And then, of course, there was the usual.
So let's talk about the audience, what the Pope had to say that day on Wednesday.
Well, the Pope focused, actually, the audience on the ecclesial nature of liturgical prayer. And very, very interesting, because one of the big things to come out of Vatican Council II, and we're just on the cusp of observing the 50th anniversary of the start of Vatican Council II, one of the biggest things to come out of the council was the liturgy, the changes in the liturgy, for example, to the vernacular and many other things. And so the Holy Father went on at length with some very lovely words about liturgy, and he said he spoke of the Catholic nature of the Christian liturgy that, despite being celebrated at a concrete time and place, comes from everything and leads to everything in union with the Pope, the bishops, and the believers of all time. And then here's a point that probably a lot of faithful are going to be happy to hear. The Pope said, because of its universality and openness, the liturgy cannot be created or altered by the individual community or by experts, but it must remain faithful to the forms of the universal church. And he said, if the centrality of Christ does not emerge in the celebration, then there is no Christian liturgy. And of course, those were the beginning words there were references to those priests who might decide on their own. They really don't like the way this or that is expressed in the liturgy, and they may add or their own words, subtract words, or change it, and that is not allowed. But at the end of the audience, the Pope spoke of his visit the next day,
Thursday,
mm-hmm. the 4th of October, feast mm-hmm. of St. Francis of Assisi, patron of Italy, to Loreto. And this was to replicate the journey taken 50 years earlier by Pope John the 23rd, who was going to go there to implore Mary to watch over the council that he had called the Vatican Council II, mm-hmm. the great ecumenical council of beginning in 62, ending in 65.
And of course, Loreto, just to remind people, is on the east coast, the Marche region.
Yeah,
of
on the
Central
Adriatic.
Italy.
Yeah, mm-hmm, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's an extraordinary shrine. I've only been to Loreto once, but it is the Holy House. There's
Virgin
a mixture of legend, right, and fact that the Holy House was brought by angels when it looked like it was going to be destroyed in Nazareth in 1290 with the onslaught of the Saracens and so forth. There was actually an Italian family named De Angelis who brought the house stone by stone. It took some time to do. Brought the house stone by stone from the Holy Land, replicated it in Loreto. And this is the house where the Holy Family was to have lived. But a very meaningful shrine. And of course, the full intention of the Pope, and we might as well just move into Thursday's visit. The full intention was to pray for the success of the Synod of Bishops, which, as I said earlier, is about to begin. We're doing this before the opening Mass. And
On Sunday
the 7th, and this lasts for 3 weeks, closes on the 28th of October. And it's the Synod on the New Evangelization. So you've got 200 bishops from all over the world will be in Rome. And the theme is the new evangelization for the transmission of the Christian faith. And it's actually where the faith has already been preached. I know we say new evangelization, but in many respects, it's a re-evangelization, because the goal is for bishops to consider new ways and methods to strengthen the faith of people. So where it already has been proclaimed. Strengthen it where it's weak or perhaps even, non-existent, or people have tended to put faith in the back of their lives.
So Europe, I would imagine, would be a big focus of this synod.
Oh, Europe, for sure. That is, according to many, many things the Holy Father has said recently and others in the Roman Curia, that's probably the biggest area for re-evangelization on the planet.
And, of course, the Middle East as well. I was speaking with the Maronite Patriarch of...
Patriarch Rai.
Patriarch mm-hmm. Rai from Lebanon, who's going to be there at the synod, and he's going to be talking about the issues of concerns for Christians, obviously, in a region really under turmoil at this moment.
And that's a region where the numbers of Christians have been diminishing. They don't want to leave their homeland. Who wants to leave their homeland, where you've got your roots and family and ancestors? They don't want to leave the homeland, but in some instances, it's like, oh my gosh, either stay and face heaven knows what violence or kidnappings or whatever, either stay or leave. So it's not that the faith has diminished. It's that the number of faithful, unfortunately, have diminished, but for reasons which are, frankly, very easy right. to understand.
So how many bishops did you say were going to be coming?
Roughly 200. And then, of course, there's in a synod, there are different types of participants, and the main ones are the synod fathers, we've just said, the bishops, and the cardinals. And the Holy Father has named, I think there's like 46 of them, and the Holy Father's named 36, and the rest are chosen by episcopal conferences. Then there's people known as experts. There will be 45 of those, and they present their different subject areas or specialties at the meetings. And then there's another 49 who are called observers, and they attend the meetings but will not directly intervene. And then, of course, what happens the first 10 days or 12 days the Synod Fathers get up and speak. They have a certain minimal time limit to their speeches. These are all recorded, of course, and excerpts are given. Usually the media presents those of us covering the Vatican, the Synod every day. And then there's a period where they meet in language groups. They're called circolis minoris. And so you've got, depending on what the main language may be, you'll have more groups in English or French or something. In the end, the Synod Fathers and the participants whose job it is to do this, they present propositions to the Holy Father. From that, the Holy Father takes a year or two to write a document like the one he presented when we were in Beirut, the post-synodal apostolic exhortation, which was from the 2010 Synod on the Middle East. So that's a rough outline of what will be happening in the weeks to come.
Okay, well, we'll have you back next week, hopefully, to talk about what's been going on that first week of the Synod. So great, Joan. We'll see you again next week then.
I will be in studio.
Okay, bye-bye.